Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready?
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Over 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have the policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them.
Hello, how are you? Hi, Art.
What's with all that background noise?
Sorry, I just... I had to hurry up and get everything closed. We got a storm coming in, so I was like, oh, my God, hurry up, get the dogs out. Let them do their business, get them back in.
Yeah.
So I just sat down next to the laptop. Okay.
So what happened with... what's going on over there?
Oh, the NATO summit meeting. Let's see. Well, they brought police reinforcements in from South Carolina and New Jersey and from different places to help because they're going to need it. And they're already starting. Now, the NATO meeting won't start until Saturday, okay? So it's Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. They've got our major... things closed down. All the museums and stuff are closed down while this is taking place. Protesters are already being arrested. They had immigrators that were disputing, you know, downtown by the Daily Center in regards to immigration laws. So people were getting arrested. Even priests were getting arrested.
Wow.
Unbelievable. So anybody that is getting out of line, they're getting arrested right then. They're on the spot. Now they have a legal team where the people are wearing like a real bright lime green kind of baseball caps where they are in full force. They're watching everything.
Is that so they can take headshots or what?
Well, that's because they're going to videotape. To make sure that the protesters have their rights that are right with the Constitution. And if there's any kind of police brutality, they will have it on film.
Yeah. Okay.
So they're going in full swing. They're already starting to shut areas down where they're limiting the traffic now. But as it gets closer to the weekend, then they're putting off. On the majority of the area. Now, like Bank of America and stuff like that, that's on LaSalle Street, they've got where you can walk down the sidewalk and see people sitting at their desks or whatever the case may be. They've got desks emptied. They've got them away from the windows. They've got officers at each building. Like I said, it's I don't know how they're going to be able to pull this off.
Yeah.
The main protesters that they're worried about right now are from France, from Paris. They're the more to cause the problems, bombings, you know, stuff like that, you know, like the cocktail bombs, that kind of nature. They're more in the violent nature. Now, they already know the violence will come. They just don't know what degree yet. So if necessary, they're going to shut it all down. That's what they've been talking about on the news here.
Uh-huh. And what do you think?
I think it's going to be excessively out of control. Now, I was alive when they had, you know, the demonstration back in the 60s. But I was too
little
young
kid.
To know what it was. Yeah, I was... Well, so were you, so get over it.
No.
I mean, we were kids, you
in
know. I was 4 in 68. Let's show our age. Anyway,
go ahead.
But, you know, I don't remember, you know, what took place with, you know, the demonstration then. But, you know, I saw it as I got to a certain age, and I remember seeing it on TV. You know, when they do the anniversary on this date, yada, yada, yada. And they couldn't control it then. Now, they're not going to be able to control this. Now, the officers are going on close to 15-hour shifts. But like I said, they're out in force. Now, I don't know in regards to the Secret Service, stuff of that nature, you know, whatever is out there, they're not saying anything about them, even though we know they're there. Now, they've got the special military helicopters. I've already seen them flying. They've been as far south as me so far, and which was really neat because I've never seen one before. I'm like, what is that? I wanted to take a picture of it, but, you know, it flew low enough where I could have. It was by the time I grabbed my phone, you know, and went to head out in front, you know, it was already taken off back towards Midway. So I wouldn't, it would have just been like a spot, you know. But like I said, I couldn't believe it because it was circling around, and I'm like, wow, check that out. That is sweet.
Hanging out the side with weapons?
What?
Were there guys hanging out the sides with weapons?
No. The side was open. The sides were open, but I didn't see anything.
Okay.
Not saying that they weren't there, but the sides were open.
Mm-hmm.
I found that very interesting. I've never seen them before. Well, you know, you have to understand, too, back on September 11th when the events took place, you know, many moons ago, when they shut everything down, all I saw were military in the air. That was it. You know, planes were just, they were grounded. They weren't going anywhere. But like I said, I've never seen these before. So, I mean, I've seen them in video, I've seen them in movies, that nature, but not live, to that nature. But like I said, it was interesting. And I hear the military, you know, the only thing is I'm not seeing them. You know, they're there.
If they want you to see them, you'll see them. If they don't, you won't.
Exactly. So, like I said, they're prepared, well, to the best of all human abilities. I don't think they're going to be ready to expect the full impact, if that makes sense, because it hasn't hit yet. That will be this weekend. That's going to be something else.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, no matter how much they're talking about on the news, it isn't going to prepare what's coming. And a majority of the people aren't paying attention anyway. You know, it's just, it's going to be nothing. You know, because all they're seeing so far are small groups of demonstrators. They are coming in by bus loads.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before they board these specific buses to come in, they have to sign a form, kind of like a waiver, okay, that they will demonstrate peacefully. Is that actually going to happen? You know, they'll know the consequences, but like I said, cars have already been towed, people are getting arrested, and like I said, it's going in regards to, you know, they showed a priest being arrested. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is crazy. You know, a priest is not going to sit there and get violent, you know, so I don't know what the issue was. And they were showing how some of the officers were disputing to the protesters. I don't think they wanted to catch that. I think it was like by accident. But
yeah,
like I said, it was something.
You know, I know that priest I had when I was a kid in Catholic school, he was pretty violent.
Right. And, you know, like I said, and, you know, it's hard to say. It's hard to say, but, you know, I saw these officers, they were, get back over there. And I'm like, whoa. I mean, and nobody was violent. That was the thing. There was no violence that they had showed. Not saying that there may not have been a dispute between people or something. Who knows? Because you're only going to be shown so much, unless if you're right there. Because we know how the media portrays, you know, what they want people to perceive. So, you know, like I said, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I don't think they're going to, I don't think Rahm Emanuel is going to have the hold on the city like
Daley did.
Even it to people. Hmm?
Like Daley did?
Yeah. Well, that was Daley's dad, you know.
I mean,
he would have, I'm sure he would have and thought he had it under control, but it came, they rushed it. It was rushed too fast, meaning protesters got way too much. They didn't expect for it to get as large as it did back then. And that, I think, you know, it's like how they have that saying, history repeats itself.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure that this is what's going to take place. History will repeat itself. But the only difference between then and now is, you know, well, I don't know if they had the drones back then because they brought up a good idea.
What do you mean he brought up a good idea? Of course they're there.
Well, I meant that he brought it. I'm sorry. He brought up a good topic here. Okay. Meaning, you know, I'm sure there are drones. Now, you know, like I said, I haven't seen them. I've seen the other part of the military, you know. So, like I said, I don't know how far the drones will go if they do have them here.
They got them.
If they will just station.
They got them. You
around.
Ain't seen them yet, Jim.
Sure. Because they were showing on the news how the military helicopters are flying through the city.
Of course.
Between the buildings and that. You know, and that's not what's supposed to be seen by the public. But I also posted that video up before on your wall so you could
see. Yeah, but what do you mean it's not supposed to be seen by the public? That's what they want it there for.
Well, yeah, but meaning the suburbs, like me, you know, we're not supposed to be seeing it. It's strictly supposed to be downtown, you know.
Why not?
Well, why would they come this far south? I'm 35 miles from where they're going to be at. Well,
don't
not
matter.
35. It's actually 19 miles. 35 right. would put you at North Avenue Beach.
Yeah, but... What did I say about, North Avenue Beach, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Or Oak Street, past Oak Street anyway.
Right.
But, now you made me lose my train of thought. No, are they still planning to evacuate 11 million people?
Well, that's what they claim.
Oh, okay.
They claim that they're going to evacuate the city to Wisconsin. Well, God bless them, because how the heck are they going to do it? When's the last time we've seen a city evacuate? They didn't evacuate New York when they were under attack.
Yeah.
You know, and how it's not that they couldn't have done so. They knew beforehand when that attack was going to take place or when the attacks were going to take place. They didn't want us to know. They want us to go on with our lives. Well, guess what? So many of us did, and the rest, so many didn't. Period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And welcome to America.
Well, of
and
course.
And don't get me wrong. I'm not slamming us. You know, I'm just slamming the effect of, you know, the government wants us to know what they want us to know. They're not going to tell us everything. We know it. But... you know, unfortunately, they put people's lives at stake so they could be safe. That's not right. So
no.
They're going to basically do the same thing here. You know, if they try to evacuate, it's going to be crazy. We see how it is on TV, the craziness when people are being evacuated because of hurricanes. Okay, it's bumper to bumper. Yeah, you're not moving fast, you know. So if it takes place, you know, well, it's going to take X amount of time for them to get out of the city. You know, that's not going to be an easy task. Now, if they don't evacuate, well, then everybody's going to see exactly what's going to take place.
Well, here I got some. We can, this is but basically what we're talking about. Hang on 1 second.
Right.
We're talking about the government secretly plans to evacuate Chicago during this summit. I'm trying to get this in the link at the time. Got it. So let me play this right here real quick.
Okay.
Plan to evacuate Chicago in case of big trouble at the NATO summit next month. The Red Cross in Milwaukee is apparently reaching out to volunteers to help prepare shelters for any Chicagoans who are suddenly relocated. CBS2's Mike Parker uncovered the story.
CBS2 News has obtained a copy of Milwaukee area Red Cross emails sent out to volunteers. The message suggests a possible plan to evacuate residents of the city of Chicago during the NATO summit. The conference, the email says, may create unrest or another national security incident. The American Red Cross in southeastern Wisconsin has been asked to place a number of shelters on standby in the event of evacuation from Chicago. That surprise disclosure has some folks who live downtown on edge. A little unnerving?
Very unnerving. I feel a little bit unsafe, maybe a little bit more than a little bit. Doesn't make me feel like I want to be in the city during the NATO conference.
I'm lost for words because I absolutely have no idea what that entails.
According to a Wisconsin Red Cross spokesperson, the evacuation plan is not theirs alone. She told us, our direction has come from the city of Chicago and the Secret Service. However, officials at the Office of Emergency Management and Communication told us tonight the directive did not come from them. The Secret Service did not return our phone calls. The Chicago Red Cross office said only, we are supporting the city in their NATO planning. A union executive who's been training his members in preparation for the summit believes such a plan might be over the top.
This could be a lot like Y2K. You know, a lot of hype and a lot of buildup. People will say that was it, you know, not a big deal.
The idea of having to evacuate Chicago residents is, number one, a scary prospect, which could account for the reluctance to talk about it. Secondly, it's probably also highly unlikely. This seems to be a case of officials wanting every possible contingency plan on the table, just in case, Robert.
Still has to make people a little uneasy, nevertheless, though, Mike.
You don't want to hear about possible evacuations, but they're planning ahead. They don't want to be surprised.
Fair enough.
Right now I'm watching the drones fly over with armed guys hanging out the sides. If you go to that video link that I posted in there,
right,
you can see what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah, that's what I saw. You know, like I said, that was a part of military that I've never seen before.
Yeah, they're flying about 5 or 6 floors up.
Right.
These are Black Hawk helicopters. Here's another one.
Good afternoon, YouTube. Here's one for you guys to speculate on. And heads up, people in Chicago and surrounding area, Milwaukee area as well. This is from Chicago.CBSLocal.com. Milwaukee Red Cross told to prep for Chicago evacuation during NATO summit. This is posted April 25th, 2012. From Chicago CBS. Is there a secret plan to evacuate some residents of Chicago in the event of major trouble during the NATO summit next month? CBS 2 has uncovered some evidence that there is. It comes from the Milwaukee area branch of the American Red Cross. CBS 2 has obtained a copy of a Red Cross email sent to volunteers in the Milwaukee area. It said the NATO summit may create unrest or another national security incident. Say that again. It said the NATO summit may create unrest or another national security incident. What are they expecting to happen at the NATO summit? Like what? American Red Cross in southeastern Wisconsin has been asked to place a number of shelters on standby in the event of evacuation of Chicago. According to a chapter spokesman, the evacuation plan is not theirs alone. Our direction has come from the city of Chicago and the Secret Service, she said. Let's see. Officials at Chicago's Office of Emergency Management and Communications said the directive did not come from them. The U.S. Secret Service did not return calls for comment. Some downtown residents told CBS2's Mike Parker that the news has them on edge. Well, no crap. What exactly are they expecting to happen at the NATO summit that they may feel the need to evacuate the city of Chicago? And will there be protesters? Will there be some disturbances? Probably. There always is. But evacuate the city of Chicago? I'll put a link to this below. Please share it. Please pass it around. Please rate the video. It helps.
So what do you think about that? You live there. I don't live there now, but you live there. What do you think about that? Nora. Nora. Lost Nora.
Huh?
Oh, I said, what do you think about that since you live there?
Well, like I said, that's, you know, that's what's taking place. In regards to, it's the information being put out there, okay? So I'm not sure what action is going to be taken, except from what I've seen so far, just major arrests, okay? And the full part of the NATO hasn't even started yet. You know, normally if you look back, like, say, during Seattle, Paris, everything else, wherever the NATO has been, it's been very violent. It slowly starts with the mild protesters, then as it gets closer, then comes the rest of them, and there's nothing but violence. In regards to evacuating the city, I don't see how they could. I'm not saying that they can't, but in order to get everybody evacuated before the NATO meeting, they would have had to have done it already. They would have had to start.
Right.
That's my opinion. Okay. Now, there are schools that are going to be closed. So they'll be doing school through computers. Because they don't want to have children out. So I'm not sure what they're expecting to take place. Obviously, it's something because they're closing all the major museums. All the main museums are going to be closed. There's so much that's going to be closed down. You cannot access in and out of there. All construction outfits that have jobs taking place downtown, they're all shut down. They are shut down from Thursday into, I want to say, Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
Wow.
So things have been prepared already.
Yeah.
But to what full extent, I don't know. But again, as I'm saying, in regards to evacuating a whole entire city, and as big as Chicago is, Okay, they would have had to have started a couple weeks ago. Okay, say from people that live in the high-rises, whatever, along the lake and everything, you know, okay, we want you to start moving out from this date to this date, you know, move it out, get out, you know, take what you need with you, get out for so many days, okay, and do it in that kind of a pattern if that's feasible because you're not going to have a massive, you know, walk up and on the highways. But, you know, like I said, they would have had to start that a long time ago to get that in place. Excuse me. But they are also stating that people that live, that have homes.
Hey,
in
certain hang on a minute. I got to do
okay.
Right back.
Okay.
Okay. You there? Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I like the song anyway. Last night I was listening to some old Jethro Tull and stuff. And Evan Trower. Anyways, yeah, like I said, I don't find it feasible in regards to them, you know, evacuating the city, but they do, before we had to go to music there, they are stating for people that own homes in the neighborhoods there, they're offering for to see if residents are willing to be paid to have people pitch tents in their yards during the NATO. I find it ridiculous. Hello.
Yeah.
Can we pitch a tent and, you know, can we have some tents pitched in your yard, you know, so we can be out there to protest? Are you crazy? This isn't following the Grateful Dead.
No.
You know what I mean? Like I found that funny. I couldn't help but to laugh because I'm like, how crazy is that? Would you honestly, if you were back here, would you honestly allow people to pop tents up in your backyard?
No.
Exactly. Not being mean, you know, but it's ridiculous. It's like, okay, hello, there's plenty of hotels, there's plenty of motels, you know, there's plenty of places. They have, since it's the weekend, people that feed the homeless, there you go. You know, they can go to the nearby churches and stuff like that. And then a lot of churches are going to be closed as well. So what are these homeless people going to do that go for, you know, what we call the pads? You know, they go in, they're able to get a nice meal, they stay there for the night, and the following morning they get breakfast, they get a lunch, you know, handed to them. They get different clothes or shirts or something if they need, you know, and out the door they go until the following week. You know, what's going to happen with them? You know, that's why I said they didn't think so far in advance on having Obama wanted here because this is where he's from. This is his home state. So since the yo-yo mayor here, you know, since when Obama was elected in office, here came this guy, you know, right behind him. Why? Because they were both from the same state, okay? It made sense. So then he separated off, Daley left, this yo-yo came in, and now he's in a position of... he can do things, but how far is he willingly to go?
Yeah.
You know, and they had for, it could have taken place in Belgium, I think it was. There were many places where they were first going at with the NATO meeting, all out of the country, not here, okay? But since Obama's president, he wanted to show what he calls his town. His states, okay? Well, what is there to see if everything's going to be closed? Or are they only going to have things open for dignitaries that will be here and it's closed off to the public? Who knows? Are they going to tell the truth? No.
Yeah.
Sorry if you hear noise. I'm fanning myself. It's 86 degrees here today, and until the storm comes in, it's not cool yet. But, you know, like I said, I just find it ridiculous and what they're doing. So, yes, I have seen the Blackhawk. I had to see that video in regards to know what I was looking at in regards with the drones. Not that I haven't seen them before on video, I have.
But Art has a good comment here, and think about what I'm going to say here.
Okay.
Tents equal protesters equals cops. Therefore, if you allow tents in your yard, expect cops to visit.
Exactly. You know, thank you, Art. He's so good. And, you know, but like I said, it's not that the cops aren't drawn to begin with. You know, come on, we've got, you know, if Emmanuel had everything set, he would not have asked for help from the Carolinas, from Jersey, from Alabama. Now, these are officers that are coming out of their state to come to this state just because of the NATO meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
they did show, you know, some of the officers, you know, walking around the areas and stuff. And, you know, when we talked last in regards to the weight issue was at play in regards to when they showed them. It's, are you kidding me? They wouldn't be able to run. And I'm not meaning this rude or bad in any manner, but because, you know, of having, say, 100 pounds over, whatever the case may be, how are they going to be able to run after somebody? They have to have somebody else do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
You know, and like I said, that's because of health issues. You know, that's not because of anything other than that. I'm not saying that they're slobs by any means. They could be healthy. They could appear to be healthy.
Well, you know, if you want to talk about that, I can read that article I wrote about my town where the cops are fat.
Yeah, and that's here. You know, it's very rare to see officers you do see officers in shape. But then you see the majority of them out of shape. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen a few in my life.
Yeah. I see paramedics sometimes in better shape than, you know, in the fire department. But, you know, the bad thing is, you know, here we are, and, you know, I don't know about anybody else. I grew up not to make fun of anybody because their size or color, race, whatever, because that's just how it was. But in regards to their weights, it's extra pressure on the organs. And some of them are a time bomb waiting to go. They just don't know it. And certain types of strains can cause a lot of health issues. You know, and that's why I'm saying, in regards to running, they're only going to be able to go so far, and that's it. And God bless whoever is backing them to pull the remaining part of that chase. You know, or they can't just cut out the canines or let out the canines and let them go on a freeway on their own. You know what I mean? That's not going to work either. So, you know, what they're going to do, I have no idea. None. But I foresee big problems. You know, it's like I can sit here and think, I dread this weekend coming because there's going to be a lot of violence. I just feel it.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. But every place where the NATO meetings have taken place, they've been excessively violent.
Well, yeah, that's just like, you know, the other day they had that federal appellate court. Illinois' wiretapping law likely violates the First Amendment. Now,
right.
Why would they likely, you know?
Right.
But that doesn't mean, it doesn't mean that the law has been abolished. It just means
right.
that Illinois cops will not be allowed to make these absurd felony arrests for now.
Right, but like I said, then here comes the other side where there's going to be certain people in huge groups wearing a certain color hat that are going to be recording. And remember, we talked about that because Obama passed and signed that bill.
Mm-hmm.
But he signed that bill in regards because of what's taking place with the NATO. Okay.
Oh, you're talking about NDAA?
Right. So here, you're not allowed to have recording devices of any kind. But here's the other shoe on the other foot. Here comes the legal side that's going to make sure the officers are in check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't
so, know. You know, but as we know, who's the biggest problems with gangs in the United States?
Who?
Welcome to the Man in Blue.
Well, yeah, they're the biggest gang out there.
Exactly.
And they hide behind the blue wall.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a sad thing. And I can't say all of them are. I'm sure there's a vast majority of them that they do their job. They don't stand behind that badge and abuse it. They're there to do a job, and then they go home at the end of the day, you know. But unfortunately, there's other ones out there that, you know, portray the badass. They are the badass. They know it. They know what they can get away with. And who are they, as they would say, who are they going to believe, me or you? How
Never.
Many times have you heard that in your life?
How many?
Yeah, countless.
More
exactly.
More like it.
You know. I mean, when my brother was alive, you know, when he used to get in trouble, and, you know, I would see officers sit there, and who are they going to believe? Who's the court? Or who's the judge that believed, me or you? And I sat there. I said, "Well, what about witness?"
Yeah.
But it was still the point. They had no problem standing behind that badge and abusing it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the question is eavesdropping stuff with Illinois. The question is whether the ACLU in the likelihood of success on the merits and should be entitled to a preliminary injunction, not whether the Illinois law is unconstitutional.
Right.
A glick like ruling by the Seventh Court would have been premature and somewhat of a judicial overreach. But the court won't rule on the merits until the district court has done so. So if the district court goes against the ACLU on merits, this may get kicked back, so it's going to bounce around from court to court for a while.
Yeah, and see, that's where this is all going to take effect because of the bill that Obama signed in regards to recording during demonstration. Remember, you can't do it during demonstration. But
right.
You know, if demonstrators aren't allowed, well, guess what? Here came the legal side because they already knew what's coming. And, well, we are here to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how nasty the badge will be to that.
Well, you never know.
You know they're going to say, you can't do this.
Right.
You know. So, like I said, I feel there's going to be a lot of violence.
But, you know, I think what they're trying to do, and like Art says here, true, is they want to use the problem to implement martial law during the event to remove all of everybody's rights.
Okay.
As well as the reference, which will have Emmanuel Watch removed.
Exactly. Okay. Do you remember time back we were talking about policing?
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Well, cops complain about the biker code of silence, like Art says, but they use the blue wall when it's convenient.
Right. Exactly. You know, our Art's doing great points here. Kudos to him. But in regards to policing, okay, it was amazing. The 6 o'clock news today was all about the mayor and his policing of certain neighborhoods. Now, you remember the Roseland area. You remember Englewood. Who doesn't know Englewood? It's like being in Gary, Indiana, you know.
I used to hang out at Wicker Park. What does that tell you?
Exactly. I already know. I know all about the neighborhoods. But what I mean is he had no problem stating on the news he is policing neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, guess what comes into my brain? Martial law.
Right.
Okay. So, as we have talked way too many times to count in regards to our rights, okay, guess what? It's being stated more and more on the news and nobody's still paying attention.
Yeah, you have no rights.
Mm-mm.
The way it's going, we'll have none at all.
Exactly. Well, like I said, it's pretty sad if they arrest a priest. Come on. It's a priest.
Well, usually priests get arrested for child molesting. But...
Well, I understand. I was just going to say, wait a minute, let me rephrase this. Okay, the good ones, okay, not the child porn idiot. But in regards to, you know, here's an immigrant priest that is just quietly there for the moment. Of course, again, we're not going to see everything because here comes the media and they only want to show what they want to show, you know, for us to see. And you know, it's like martial law doesn't have to fully take place because the media has done it for as long as the media has been out there, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, here's a man in a cloth. It's a cloth. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they handcuff him and they walk him, you know, to the vehicle. He accommodates, meaning he's calm. He looks very upset. Why? He's a priest. He's got his collar on. You know, and it's like, okay, you're going to arrest a priest. Who's next? A child? Come on. I wouldn't doubt it. That's a child would be the next. But the reason why the mayor is policing neighborhoods here in Englewood and the Roseland area and everything else is because of the gangs. He wants to get a stamp on the street gangs, like you wouldn't believe, and the drug deals or dealers. So, you know, in a 13 area block in an Englewood neighborhood, they arrested over 27 drug dealers. Kudos. Okay, well, guess what? There's always the next in line. So by them policing the neighborhoods and the areas, because they're not just going to stop there. It's going to eventually go everywhere else because the suburbs are not immune. You know, it just doesn't happen only in the city. You know, but like I said, when is it going to be enough?
Yeah.
When is it finally going to be, okay, at one point, so I don't feel that you and I will be here forever doing the show. Well, helping me help.
I don't know. I don't.
The show.
Why? You got you got a crystal ball or something or what?
No. But because the way they're talking about policing,
they can police all they want.
They're not coming. Right. They're not
until
coming
they
out.
Stamp out the First Amendment, they can kiss my ass.
Well, exactly, and I understand that. But what I mean is in regards to the bullying part of policing, they're not outwardly coming out yet and saying martial law. But at some point, it will get bad.
Well, yeah.
You know it, and I know it.
Well, if you think about it, evacuating the city is martial law.
Well, exactly.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
858.
Hey, Phil. Is this Phil or Bill?
Oh, it's Philip.
Phil, this is Sean Kelly from Mount Solvet.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
Yeah, they had better days, but go ahead.
Well, I got a little bit of gripe today, a little bit different a subject, and that is this law.
You know, I know I got your email. You had a burning desire.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know.
He's not here on the radio.
Yeah, let me tell you this, Sean. You can say however, or I can tell you. Tell us how you really feel.
Well, let me first say the subject, so fill people in. This new law regarding aftermarket exhaust on our Harleys.
Okay.
I ran into a problem today already, or the other day, and that is I wanted to replace the gaskets. It seemed like I had an exhaust leak, and I wanted to replace the rings that you fit into your heads before you put on your exhaust, and they're not available here in California. And you can imagine how upset I was.
Where are the pipes made by?
The pipes are Vance Hines.
Okay, and up north, they don't have them in the store up there?
Well, you know, I didn't look up north. I was told that you couldn't get them out of California. And
they were wrong.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
If you go online and find his website, they'll send you whatever you need.
Okay, okay.
As long as your money is green.
Green back.
That's it.
All right. Well, that was an easy solution. It did upset me though. I went with the stock ones. They said, you know, they hadn't had someone come in yet with that issue, and they wanted me to give them some feedback to let them know how they work. And I don't know yet. You know, with something like that, you don't know until you've ridden it for a while if everything's seated and sealed right. You know, and
well,
you're not...
have any more problems, you let me know, and I'll send you to a guy who basically can make anything or give you anything you want for your bike.
Well, that's incredible. I appreciate that. I appreciate that a lot. I'm looking for some new exhaust. I got the Vantine short shots, and I wanted to put on something longer. And I'll tell you, I wanted to put on something longer and louder. And as I understand it, you know, and you can help me out with this probably again, as I understand it, the reason they outlawed them was greatly due to the noise. And I've always felt, as a motorcyclist and concerned for my safety, that, well, you've all heard the phrase, loud pipes save lives, and I do believe in it. I blip my throttle when I want someone to know I'm there faster than I would my horn, because they can't hear my horn.
But no, it's like when we're riding in the pack. Everybody gets a little rev when they're going to switch lanes.
Yeah.
Just to make everybody aware you're moving over.
Now, am I correct? Is that why they outlawed them, or is it an emission thing?
No. They tried it in Boston, and that's what happened, is that Pavley broad got it hooked up with that guy from Boston, mm-hmm. and Boston was going to do it where they if your bike was parked in a spot, they would come up and read and see if you had the EPA sticker on your exhaust. If you didn't, they were going to give you a $300 ticket. As of right now, it's in limbo. They couldn't enforce it, but that broad Pavley said, well, look, they're doing it in Boston, and that's how they got it, part of it passed here.
Sure. Huh. Well, you know,
but
I know somebody.
She brought it in, yeah. People were worried because she wanted the small motorcycles, too.
Interesting.
There's no way they could do that.
Go ahead.
If your bike was 40 years old and they set the standards to, say, 2012, you're fucked.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean that would what would people with vintage bikes do?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They don't make newer, you know, pipes. Well, they just don't make pipes for like that. I don't know if they're gonna.
The other thing I could tell you, and he doesn't do it to bend anybody over to make money on the exhaust. But if you go down to Bill's shop. Not a plug for Bill, but if you go down to his shop, and it is a way to plug for Bill, but if you go down to his shop and you go in the back room,
mm-hmm.
and when you walk through the door, you go to the left and you make a right through the other door and you make another left, and there's a whole wall full of exhaust parts.
Well, I'm in there.
Everything.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to take a look at that tomorrow. I get off work rather early tomorrow, and I'm going to take a look. I don't mind used exhausts as long as they're not rusted out.
It's like this, Sean. A little elbow grease, and they'll look brand new.
Hey, brass wool works great, too.
Yeah, if you use that stainless 404, like a Brillo pad,
uh-huh.
that'll bring up the chrome without scratching it, too.
I've used that before, and it's done. You know, I ride a 2000 Dyna, and it's well taken
what color?
Care of. But what?
What color?
Gray primer.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't.
Mine's all black.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that, and you know, and I just took too long, and it's gotten so popular that you're getting black bikes coming out of the dealership now, and. That was one of the reasons why I painted it gray primer in the first place, is I wanted it I wanted it to look a little rattier than just a stock bike. And
it's just like I learned in Marine Corps. This is my rifle. There are many like it, but this one is mine.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you know, everybody said, "Why did you go and do that?" And I said, "You know, I couldn't." And I don't know if you're familiar with the two-tone scheme that they put on this. Bike, but I didn't care for it. Other bikes had plaques on the tanks, and they on this particular model, it looked like somebody just took a thin paintbrush and wrote Harley Davidson on the side. And I just thought, you know, that looks really cheesy. And so I go, I'm going to do my own thing here, and I'm going to paint the bike. But in the meantime, it's going to be great primer, and everybody seems to like it.
Bill's riding a. He sold the last bike he had, and he's riding a gray Dyna. But it's painted gray, not primer,
mm-hmm.
but he's got the high bars on it.
Right.
He's got the short gun for the short pipes. Pretty nice.
Yeah, this is kind of neat. It's another thing I like about Harleys. It's you really can do so many things with them after you purchase them to make it your own bike. And that's what I've done with this bike. I dropped it, you know, it's rigged pretty low, but I didn't do it the traditional way. I did a quick fix way, and what I did is I bought some aftermarket progressive suspension shocks for the rear that were shorter, and that dropped the rear down. I took the narrow stock Dyna front end off, and I put on a wide glide, but I cut it.
Uh-huh.
So the whole bike is dropped down, and I got drag bars on it. You know, it's got a cam in it, you know, and RNS, big sucker on it. But, you know, it, not a whole lot of work on it, but just enough to personalize it to make it my bike. And, you know, I'm not done with it yet. I'm going to paint it, but I'm not sure what color yet. And I don't know if Bill does that over there or not, or maybe he can just point me in the right direction. But I want to do the tins probably this month. But
yeah, he's got
I'm
a good guy over there. If you go over there tomorrow, just tell him I told you that you want to talk to Joe.
Okay.
And then, like mine, if you go on the website, you'll see mine part. And Bill and I are tire to tire front end sitting on our
bike.
All
right. Okay, I'll take a look there. Yeah, I've seen a
it's that picture. Everything that was chrome or gray. Everything's all black now. There's not very much chrome on the bike at all. The only thing I didn't powder coat was the wheels. But I'm thinking about doing that next.
Oh, you did? So you did powder coated it all yourself. Who'd you have do it? If you don't mind me asking.
When you get there tomorrow, ask Kyle.
Okay.
Oh, I told you that you want to talk to the powder coater.
Yeah. You know, I've gotten into so much trouble of adding on chrome parts. So. Throughout the years, that I feel like it's a shame, but you know, here living on the coast more or less, so I'm in Mira Mesa. We're about 7 miles off the beach, and it's a lot of work. You know, you got to keep up on that chrome to keep it from rusting, and you know, so there I see the advantage to it. Besides it just being popular right now, what do they call it? The denim look or the suede look or I don't know, I've heard different terms used when referring to black. Okay.
Yeah, like mine came all black, but it's a Dynaglide Super Glide Sport.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that bike.
Yeah, it's got all the trick suspension on it, and it's all adjusted. Like, I weigh 160 pounds, so if you got on it and you weigh 200 pounds, you would have a difference in riding it because it's set up for me, for my weight.
Right. So is this bike too. Let me ask, on that particular frame, didn't that come with a more of a rake on the frame on the front?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, if you go on the website, you can see it's got a little bit of a rake.
I'll take a look at that. That's one of the reasons why I did what I did is because it does. The neck on it is so just compact, almost straight up and down. Have left the stock front end on it, it would have put the frame at such an angle that I just didn't care for it. I wanted to keep the plane, as level as possible, and this is what I came up with. Some people like it, some people don't. I got some compliments on this ride this weekend. We went up to Pala with the Res Riders. And I guess someone had passed away,
yeah.
I was admiring a bike that one of those guys had done, set up pretty much. This bike looks as if, he just took a credit card, slapped it down, and said, do everything, all at once. And my bike, he was looking at my bike. He liked it, too, but you could tell the difference. There's a guy that does that, and there's a guy that does it piece by piece and changes his mind, and that's what my bike is.
Yeah. No, Bill and I were in discussions about this bike, and I just happened to get mine first, and I looked for about 6 months.
Right.
With other dealers, and then like that new one they came out with, that new Road Glide,
mm-hmm.
the one that's for $50,000. You can buy this bike for $23,500 and change four pieces of chrome and have the same bike.
I haven't seen that bike yet. I did see a Fat Boy that they had done up at a dealership here recently that it looked like the Batmobile. I mean, this thing was just, I mean, just it had the stretch tank yet, and everything was blacked out, and it was something else. But they weren't asking nearly $50,000. I'd like to see that bike that you're talking about.
It's the 110, but it's at
okay.
They have one at Biggs. I mentioned it to Bill, and he happened to mention to the guy. And the next time I went in there, there was three salesmen following me around all day long, going, "Hey man, come look at this bike. Hey,
sure.
I don't want to look." Yeah.
Sure. Are you going to be at that ride this Saturday?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'll meet you in person there. What time did they meet? I think it's at 8 o'clock, isn't it?
Yeah, and I got the ride starts at 8, but I don't go on those rides because I don't ride with people I don't ride with.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing I don't like about these things. Years ago, I looked into riding with Hog and stuff like that, but they seem to get, you know, and nothing. I encourage people to ride motorcycles, you know, that are, you know, capable of doing so. But it seemed like every time I did it with those groups, there was someone in front of me or behind me who'd never ridden in a line, and I felt I was more concerned about them than the people in the cars. You know,
yeah.
That has upset me a little bit.
Yeah, that's
but
where
yeah.
you let them go first. But
exactly.
Yeah, that guy you were talking about, the Res Riders, he had a heart attack coming back from Yuma.
Is that right? That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
You said Yuma, right? Not Laughlin.
No, Yuma.
And was he riding?
There was like seven people went down that weekend.
Oh my!
Yeah, just so everybody knows, I lost two guests, and the two guests, one was from the North County Task Force, and the other one was Orange County Task Force. Yeah. They sneak in as guests, but they don't realize that when they sneak in as guests, I check who the guest is, and I get the IP address, and then I look it up and who it is.
That's nice to know. That's a good idea.
And then Fran also said, when you get this bike done, she'll shoot it for you.
All right. That
yeah,
sounds
she'll
fantastic.
Shoot.
I've got a couple ideas. I'll run past her. You know, you mentioned Fran right now, and I'm glad you did because I almost forgot. Bob Phillips, our director of marketing up there at Mount Soledad Memorial Association, wanted me to give her a number regarding the sign language for the hearing impaired. She had asked about that, and he didn't want me to do any more about it other than have her call him. If I could give her the number. That would be okay. Is she here tonight?
Yeah, she's here now. I'll get her to call, and then she said she'd call once you get a chance. So
okay. Well, tell you what, I got her number the other day. What I'll do is after this, I'll just forward his number to her.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds great.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to ask you. I wasn't clear yet. I had spoken with our executive director. About the Memorial Day ceremony Monday, the 28th, you mentioned that some people might ride up there on bikes, and there's always a issue with parking there. And I'm able to set something aside, but I wanted to get a better idea as to how many people I could expect. So I can.
Oh, what I'd like you to do tomorrow, if you run up to Bill's, Bill's got a better idea on that one than I do.
Okay, okay.
And you can run it by him?
I will.
Okay.
All righty. Let's see. Well,
Fran volunteered to do, let's see. Yeah, she's going to be there on Saturday, and she said she'll shoot as well.
Okay. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Well, Fran has her own bike, but let me read it to you this. She wrote,
yeah.
You can use the green Screeby's wand, 000 steel wool, best finer than any sandpaper, unless you use wet body sandpaper. It's so funny that I know what to do because I leave my bike dirty until it rains. And then she says, when this guy gets the bike painted, she'll shoot it like she did for me.
Right on.
Yeah, that was the only time I had a woman on her back in a parking lot for 6 hours, and all I got was some great pictures. No. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure she'll call in when she gets a chance.
Okay, great. I haven't ate dinner yet, so I'm
okay.
going to pop in there. But I wanted to take this opportunity to mention also if there's anybody that wants to help on Monday the 28th at 8:30 in the morning to set up 50 flags, I could use somebody for about an hour. And I'll take care of breakfast or lunch or whatever it is.
Yeah, and what you need to do then is call in Thursday and
mm-hmm.
send me an email with that, and I'll put it on the blog for you with contact information.
Right on. Well, then I'm going to go chow now, but I appreciate it, and thanks for the information. I'll probably be up there around 10:30, 11 o'clock tomorrow.
Well, you won't see me because I'll be walking around on the San Diego down at 32nd Street, so.
Okay.
You guys
I'll
have a good time. Tell Bill I said hello.
I will. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, man.
Have a nice evening.
You too. All right, so are you there still?
Yes. I'm sorry about being quiet. There's an episode with Poons.
Episode with who?
Coons.
Who?
Coons.
Oh, you're watching it right now, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not out till 10 here.
Uh-huh.
I know more than you think I know. Just like if you're watching that, when you see that man put his hand on somebody's shoulder and he looks you in the eye, you better look him in the eye and tell him the truth.
Oh, I know. Like I said, I'm
it's
kind of
hard for me to look at him in the eye because he's about 3 feet taller than me, but
well,
I try.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand something because I have pants or jeans I was helping out. Some friends, okay? And so when I received them, you know, it was like, oh, I got to pull these out and see what they look like, you know, so that way I could give a better description, you know.
And they're as tall as you are, right?
Well, let's put it this way. I'm only 5'2", okay? So the funny part of this, the moral of the story, is when I took a pair out, you know, like the bottom of your jeans, I put like on the top of the bottom part of the foot of the jeans I had on the top of my foot. Okay, so as I held it up to see how like the height, it was
yeah.
past my collarbone. I'm like, are you serious? Oh, my God. I mean, all I could think about is, yeah, this is very, very, very tall. There's a friend of mine that I sent two pairs to, you know, because
uh-huh.
I had told him it fit him in the waist, it was just in the length, and I said, just take him to the dry cleaner, so I'll hem him for you. And I said, it doesn't cost much to get them, maybe about $6, $7, something of that nature. And so I said, oh, okay, cool. So when he got them, he called me. He's like, are you freaking kidding me? Do you know? And I'm like, yes, I do. And he's like, he's a giant. I know. But I thought it was funny at the time. Sorry. But, you know, I was going to take a picture of me being inside the pants. Of course, with clothes on. To hold them up. you know, they have, like, my daughter take a picture of them and say, ooh, look at this pants I have on, you know, and post it up and have how many people laugh and say how ridiculous that was. Because Stacy had told me, she's like, you would need probably about, like, 2 to 3 of you to make it look fucking decent. One in one leg, one in the other, and one for the butt.
I just want to say, you know, we had the president of a club here killed in a drive-by the other day. So I wanted, Bill and I wanted to send our condolences to the Black Sabbath MC out of San Diego.
Yeah, my prayers and condolences to the family and to the charter.
Yeah.
That's
so what,
not easy at all.
Yeah. Hang on 1 second.
Okay.
Hello, Bobby.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hi, Bobby.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Oh, we're doing fine. How are you? Well, it's hot here. Is it hot there?
Actually, it's cooled off somewhat here in NorCal. But I have a cold to show for my travels to Indianapolis, so I'm trying to stay.
Yeah, you did.
I hate it when I go back there. I would come back.
Turn on you.
I'm sorry, say again?
Hey.
I said I hate it when I go back there. I always come back with a cold.
Yeah, exactly what happened. You should have warned me.
Oh, jeez. I don't hear a cold. I live here. Well, not in Indy, but Indy's like,
Nor is on the south side of Chicago.
No, he knows where I'm at. I mean, he knows I'm in the States. We're right next door to Indiana.
So what's going on, Bobby, up in your neck of the woods?
Well, I mean, actually, the reason why I was on the road to begin with is I attended the National Coalition of Motorcyclists, which is the COC of COC national meetings, held annually in various locations. This year it was held in Indianapolis. And
do you have any problems with the way you were dressed?
For the most part, I will just say that the host clubs, we were the Outlaws Motorcycle Club and Sons of Silence, were very hospitable, and there were no issues.
Good. Good. Glad to hear that.
Yep. So, but it was an eventful series of meetings, and if you care to hear, I'll just give you some
yeah.
highlights. Okay.
Give everybody an update.
All right. So basically, several years back, NCOM, which is short for National Coalition of Motorcyclists, created another sub-organization called the Legislative Task Force, and it has progressed and actually gotten more organized over the last several years. But the key point this year, the LTF has forged congressional relationships at the federal level, which will now lead to what we hope will be the creation. Well, I think it is. It's leading to the creation of a congressional caucus for motorcycles to help
mm-hmm.
with the advance of NCOM and biker rights across the country. So it's NCOM's hope to leverage this relationship and caucus to develop a national motorcycle profiling bill.
Good.
So
good.
If such a bill should pass, obviously, at a federal level, then all states will have to follow it. In the meantime, you know, there is a big call out for states to, you know, really get on the wagon here to develop their own state and local motorcycle profiling bills, very similar to the one passed in Washington. So again, the members of the U.S. Defenders Program, Double D. Marty Fox from AIM and others who were part of the 2.5-year fight to pass that bill in Washington were there, and they've come a long way in putting together a toolkit, for lack of a better term, or roadmap for other COCs in the state to use. Now, obviously, you know, every state is going to be different, but they provide some very straightforward points regarding how to go about doing it the way they did, in fact, and sort of avoid the pitfalls and the mistakes and help on preparations. So basically,
we have some people in the chat room who says that thank you for the email updates.
Email updates?
Yeah, Fran said that thank you for the email updates.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm trying to get some information out, you know, through email and posting on social sites like Facebook, just to provide a little bit of highlights. And before I forget, the legislative hotline, I'm sorry, the legislative task force has a hotline, which is open to any motorcyclist from any state to report on, document, and report on any motorcycle right type of issues, whether they're safety-related, civil, criminal, et cetera, so that it can be captured and assigned for some assistance, which I thought is pretty cool. Cause,
right,
again,
I posted that to the button, and I saw that when you sent it.
Yeah, so that resource is available, as well as
somebody posted
for me. Okay, thanks very much. Okay, some of the interesting things, there was a discussion or a breakout session on profiling itself where members of the U.S. Defenders team discussed their road to getting the bill passed and had lawyers and everybody present. And basically one of the key outcomes on those was the discussion around discriminated classes, the definitions of profiling in the eyes of the law, and the and this was most interesting to me, the use of the there's a federal program where you call it the Freedom of Information Act.
Right.
And what's known as the Freedom of Information Request, which basically mandates that law enforcement actually disclose beyond the level of discovery that's typically applied in the courts, very specifics on any type of pullover, very specific to the level of detail, which includes, you know, police officer records, videos, and everything else, to be used in building a body of evidence towards legislation. So I thought, you know, that's probably the least known resources that people normally think about when they get pulled over. You know, and they're discussing with their lawyers. I'm sure their lawyers might bring that up, but I thought that was very interesting. I'd like to personally explore, you know, how well
also,
that...
You can also send a public service request too. It's just like
okay.
A Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah, exactly. Now I also have heard that each state might have their own version
right.
of that as well. So it may not be as straightforward. So at least what I'm trying to do here is work with our civil rights attorney to, you know, dig a little further and determine the distinctions between the two, how they're best executed and applied for our use here in California. I know this conversation here is not limited to California, but in the context of this discussion, that's
right.
where at least I am concentrating. Okay, and then also, I'm not sure if everybody caught wind of this, but going back to January of this year, when we were at the Sacramento Capitol lobbying for before going into hearings around AB 1047, the funding for motorcycle-only checkpoints and the helmet bill, there was some rumors slash discussions around lane splitting. And since then, we've been keeping a vigilant eye towards any bills labeled lane sharing or lane splitting that might have been put on the legislative agenda this year, which there were none. But as we all know, pieces of legislation are typically also sneaked in through other bills, so we were keeping a close eye on that. So far, up to this date, we have not seen anything addressing lane splitting as a safety issue or any type of bill to provide some type of legislative relief in that area. However, recently the California OTS, or you know, Department of Transportation and Safety, released a survey known as the Motorcycle Lane Splitting Intercept Study, which basically used a sampling of about 600 motorcyclists who were pulled over, as well as about 700 to 800 cage riders, and asked them very pointed questions about lane splitting. And the problem with these surveys is, depending upon who writes them, you can gear them towards an end result, right, which to me was sort of fishy, because at the end of the whole thing, he left you with an impression, even in this small sampling, that lane splitting is potentially a safety hazard and are dangerous. So that, and, you know, again, goes back and to me lays a groundwork potentially now for possible future legislation, using this as sort of the anchor point to introduce the notion that lane splitting here in California is a problem that needs to be solved with a legislative bill or remedy. Do you know what I mean? So to that end, there are, within the NCOM legislative task force, there was a person there heading up who's been doing a lot of work on behalf of her state, which is Arizona, and several other states that are looking to introduce legislation that would actually allow for or legalize the use of lane splitting for safety reasons. Okay, sort of the contrary, so the opposite. So I'm looking to work with them, and they're interested in working with us here in California to use a similar tactic to offset what I see as sort of the negative spin that the OTS is putting on this, so that we can preemptively be ready to argue the situation in case legislate find a sponsor and try to introduce something, so we can very quickly address it and hit it off at the pass, because I think you and I and others here on this call have shared their passion around lane splitting in the state of California. I can't live without it. And if this doesn't light a fire under people's feet to actually get moving and get, you know, getting together and taking some action, then we simply just don't have any hope for anything else, you know.
Well, it goes back, like anything else, you bend over once, you're going to bend over twice. And if we don't stand up now, people are going to bend over.
Yep. So, again, let's see. I think I mentioned the U.S. Defender leadership announced the plan in conjunction with the legislative task force for their newly established Congressional Caucus for Motorcycles to create national profiling legislation. So right now, we're just in the beginning stages for that. So the call-out has been to all the clubs within all the COCs, through all the states, for any individuals who may have a relationship with their congressional legislators, where we can use sort of opening of the door type of a situation to approach them, because we're going to need all their support in order to make something of this magnitude happen. So this is being done across all the states as we speak. And so for anybody who's out there listening, if you do have any personal relationships with congressional leaders, and I think here in the state of California we're talking the Boxers and Feinsteins of the world, to let us know and to introduce yourself and let us know so we can work with you on an approach to gaining their ear on this very important subject to all of us here. And to another strategy was to also strengthen our political base, meaning motorcycles' political base, with alliances from previously unlikely groups. I mean, and talk about, privacy issues and civil liberties issues. There may be those who don't necessarily agree with all programs initiated and fought by the ACLU, but, you know, a lot of their civil rights stances and issues are very close to us as well. And so, it seems like a good idea to try to work with groups like the ACLU and other civil liberties organizations, because there is strength in numbers, and of course any organizations that are highly funded and have lawyers and everything else are also a good thing. The other thing that came out is the whole notion of, when I talked about the body of evidence to support profiling or any piece of legislation, tangible evidence is very, very important. So that means when motorcyclists are stopped each and every time they even have an encounter with a police officer, whether it's an encounter, detainment, or arrest, that we're asking everybody to document those stops with as much detail as they can. We're going to try to come up with something simple and something online that we can put out there for folks to fill out easily, so don't, you know, they're not burdened, and we'll even offer help.
I tell everybody, I don't care what happens, fill out an IA complaint, get the names.
Exactly.
And lot of times people have told me, well, they tell me they don't have a business card. And tell them to write it down on a piece of paper for you and give it to you.
Well, I mean, this is a, you know, well, for this particular thing, there's a couple of things here, and I think you're very familiar with these, Phil, right? First, it's really understanding what your rights are to begin with, because that way you can head off, you know, a lot of issues or circumvent some issues, you know, providing you know how to handle the situation. But in any event, whether you're stopped and you know how to handle yourself and you get out, or whether, you know, you fall prey to some of the, you know, police banter and open yourself up to more interrogation, you really need to document that and it back to. Go ahead.
Hey, we have a caller on the line. Who's going to tell us about that, what we're just talking about right now, because he went to court today, and I wanted to find out what happened. Oh,
okay.
Billy.
Sure. Yeah. Hello.
Go for it, man. What happened today?
So we went to court this morning, and
Hold on. Start at the beginning so everybody gets an idea of what we're talking about. I'm sorry.
All right. Me and a friend were downtown Oceanside, got stopped by Oceanside. PD for being, I guess, suspicious or whatever, and when they searched us, I had a push button like Gerber knife on me, and so did my friend. So they basically gave us tickets. After the long story short, they gave us tickets for a misdemeanor carrying a switchblade.
Well, yeah, but weren't those knives issued to you by the Marine Corps in Afghanistan?
Yes, the knife was issued to me in Afghanistan by the Marine Corps. So today we went, you know, our court date was today. Went down there, and basically no charges were filed or no police report. Anything was turned in. There's no record of us getting the ticket. There is nothing in the system. So basically we went in there, went to the district attorney's office, got our ticket stamped, and that was the end of that. They have up to a year to file the paperwork and the charges, and that was that.
Okay. So you got the names and everything, right?
Yep.
So we're going to make out some IA complaints, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll set that up and we'll do that.
I'm sorry, this is Bobby. So I didn't, maybe I missed something, but were these issued knives through the military actually switchblades?
They're push-button Gerbers. Yeah, you push a button and it opens up.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so in the state of California, those are technically illegal.
Yes.
And were they out in how did they get them? Were they attached to your vest? Or
yeah, it was like, you know, it was in my, you know, my pocket on the side. You could see the clip and everything.
Okay.
He asked if I had any weapons on me. My straight blade knife, you could see. You know, I told him, you know, look, I got a straight blade. You could see it. And then he pulled out my other knife, you know, and was like, oh, that's illegal, blah, blah, blah. Threw it, you know, on the ground or whatever. And
what was the actual reason for the pullover?
We were walking, and he came down the road. We walked between the sidewalk and the transformer, because that's where the sidewalk went, and he didn't like what we were wearing as far as our clothing. And
big kind of problem you had going to Indiana, Bobby.
Yeah, okay.
And
okay.
There's no reason to stop us. We didn't do nothing wrong. It's not like we're pissing behind the transformer. We walked by it, and he said we were hiding stuff back there. So we're like, go ahead, look.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
We told him, go ahead and look. We didn't hide nothing back there, you know. And, you know, he's like, well, you guys look like you're trouble. We know where you're going. We know what you do, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, we don't know what the hell you're talking about. You know,
yeah,
obviously you can't friggin' read with our clothing says, you know.
Yeah, but still, I think this is exactly what the whole subject of profiling and the definition was. It's basically using a person's attire to treat them as a suspect class, basically, you know, a class of individual who, by virtue of what they wear, is viewed upon by law enforcement as somebody who is more than likely to commit a crime. So, and,
exactly.
You know, so that's the whole situation on that. And so, yeah, I completely relate.
Yeah,
yeah, that is
something
that needs to get stopped.
That's a screwed up situation.
Yep.
What's that?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. This type of stuff we need to fight. So, you know, not all, fortunately for you, I guess everything seems to have dropped. But I, you know, one of the call outs that we tend to talk about over and over again with everybody who rides motorcycles in various organizations is, you know, you can't just let them get away with that, right? You document it, and if it were a real breach of your constitutional rights, you know, you would also file a formal complaint into the police department or through City Hall, as well as if it really became down to a big, big issue, then, you know, securing a lawyer and seeing what could be done there if there were any damages sustained by virtue of the stop. Which it didn't seem like in this case, but...
The one thing that he didn't mention was he had got stopped before, and when he asked the guy for a receipt, the guy gave him back to him and told him, do not come downtown with this. The next guy, when he asked him for a receipt, he told him he was going to charge both of them with a felony. In fact, what did he say, Billy? You want to go that way, I'll charge you with a felony, I'll lock you up right
now?
Yeah,
he said if I want to go that way, he can lock me up right now. So I was like, go for it, you know, I mean, no big deal. And then but when I told him that, and he was like, whatever, you guys are trying to act all badass, this and that, we know how you guys are. It's my 12 years on the force, and we just started laughing at him, you know. And then, you know, when he calls for backup, you know, four other guys come down there and just stand around and just look
at
us.
I wouldn't say it's difficult, but it's sort of an art to walk the fine line between, you know, being somewhat respectful to a law enforcement officer who's harassing and jacking you up, and maintaining your, you know, constitutional rights. Because, you know, you don't want to antagonize them to a point where they just tend to make the situation worse, call in backup, add more charges, things like that. Because that just complicates, you know, your personal situation.
Yeah, we were being real cooperative and everything, you know what I mean? Like, when he searched me, he's like, you got any weapons? I was like, yep, I got a knife here, I got a knife here. Asked for my ID, gave him my ID, you know. We weren't being, like, dicks or anything to him. And, you know, then he started stepping it up a notch when backup got there. You know, he started, you know, trying to be Mr. Badass. And,
so, Phil, even in Phil, if I can ask you a question. So even in this situation, knowing that, you know, they have some level of probable cause because they have a known illegal blade on the outside, and when asked if they can be searched, should a person say, just unequivocally say, yeah, go for it, or, you know, what is the reason or challenge it?
Ask why you want to search me. I have done nothing wrong. Am I being detained?
Well, yeah, understood that piece.
Well, we didn't get that far, you know, with our situation. He didn't ask if we could be searched. He was like, turn around, put your hands behind your back, you know, and then he started just searching me for no reason, you know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, you know, what are you guys doing? Already got anything on you I need to know about? It wasn't one of those situations. It was, hey, stop, get over here, put your hands behind your back, turn around, you know?
Yeah, see, that's bullshit right there. Did you, I'm thinking you didn't think to ask for their supervisor either, right?
Oh, no, I was pretty freaking, I was just letting it go, and I was just like, whatever, you know, because I had a feeling this was going to happen in court as far as them not doing a thing, so.
But the big question is, now, there was no child charges filed or anything that said it up to a year, so did you ask for a writ to get your stuff back?
I talked to the guy you put me in contact with, and we're going to be working on that together.
Okay.
Yeah, it's strange that the court didn't have any record.
There was nothing.
Exactly.
Like, there was,
and Art corrected me. It should be, I do not give up my rights, but will not resist.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So just another shining example why we need laws here to sort of condemn profiling of any type. And, you know, and like one state is, I think it's Connecticut right now, and it remains to be seen whether this law will pass. But a legislator in Connecticut recently introduced a bill that would actually make the law enforcement officer directly liable for any outcomes of a civil matter where, you know, it was determined that there was harassment or police abuse. So in a situation where they were wrong, illegally arresting somebody or whatever, and the matter was brought to trial, and of course usually financial fees are granted. Excuse me.
Right.
In this case, they're looking for those penalties to go directly to the police officer and not have the taxpayer in the city and or county paper, which I thought was very, very interesting. Again, remains to be seen if that bill will pass, but that could be sort of a game changer if police officers knew that they would be at the short end of the stick if they were to get sued for any type of situation like that.
Well, you know, I don't know if you guys have heard my little rant on OPD and their health issues, but here it goes. A visit to Oceanside will open your eyes to the health problem of what seems to be the entire police force. You know, in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with putting on a little extra weight. But driving around in Oceanside, California the other day, I was shocked at how many overweight police officers I saw. We've all seen the movies where they make fun of cops as being frumpy and heavy and a whole lot of not too bright. And we've all heard of the donut eating references a million times, but it would seem that sometimes stereotypes are born of truth. Driving downtown on my way to the beach, I happened to pass two officers within a couple of blocks of each other. Both were overweight, although I didn't think anything of it at the time, not until I stopped at the local coffee house, which is across from the place on the corner there, Billy.
Yep.
At about 9 in the morning, did the health problem of Oceanside Police Department become glaringly apparent. There were several police officers in the shop. Don't ask me why so many were in uniform, not working at the exact same time. And absolutely all of them were in possession of a few more pounds than normally healthy. One of them was what I thought was referred to as grotesquely overweight. Normally, I don't care about people's weight. However, when we're talking about public servants, people who are supposed to protect us, I have some pause for serious thought. You know, if anybody just happened to be robbed or worse yet, sexually assaulted, I realize if someone screamed for help and one of these guys was nearby and able to respond, there's no hope in hell that they would be able to catch the perpetrator. Unless the officer is not around in the coffee shop and is lucky enough to be in a vehicle, in all likelihood, the suspect is going to get away. This is just not acceptable, so I have to ask the obvious. What the hell's going on here? Are there no physical standards to speak of? Are there standards, but nobody on the force is taking them seriously? Are there no repercussions for those who don't meet the standards? The military has physical standards, so what's going on with the police? Some can laugh at cops in general for being out of shape, but the fact of the matter is, not a laughing matter for some unforeseen reason. You have to depend on their services and protection. If they aren't willing to take care of themselves, then how are they going to take care of you? It's unfortunate that this is such the case, and I have cause to write about this issue, but it is what it is, and it's very sad.
Well, I got a question for all of that. Is
sure.
If a law enforcement officer does not have the physical agility and the strength to actually do the job correctly, do you think there's a elevated risk of using deadly force, meaning like tasers, you know, handguns, dogs, etc., to catch and subdue suspects because they can't?
Exactly. And you see it more and more. Just like you see, taking case in point, the Rodney King thing. There was, what, six or seven guys? Maybe one of those guys was slim and trim, and the rest were all fat.
Or even and, using vehicles, actually, you know, to hit people.
Exactly.
In cases of that as well.
Exactly.
Yep.
Oh, and when I go down there now, because of this being, I put this on the blog, and I sent it around, and I sent it to one of my friends who's down there, and he's one of the older guys that gets it. And if you know what I mean by gets it, he knows that I'm not doing anything wrong. I just want to be able to have a choice and not be told what to do. You know, like Art says, ignorance of the law is no excuse except if you're a cop. That's very true.
I agree.
And then we hold on. Is this Miss Boston?
Who else? Who else would it be? Your evening cranky Yankee sitting in my little east corner of the map. I didn't hear all of the show, but of course, what I heard as I was listening along, I have to throw my 2 cents worth at you. The whole cop spiel and being overweight. I have to agree with the person who just said, you know, if they can't basically get up and move and tend to a situation, that entitles me to believe that they would use more aggressive force. But what is concerning to me more, though, is, for instance, let's take a look at the elderly population and how many times we have to call for any type of rescue for them, you know, whether they've had a heart attack or they got a fever, whatever. And these people are supposed to be able to administer, you know, basic first aid, CPR, et cetera. And if, you know, they're too big to run after Joe Schmo, how are they going to tend to doing stuff like that? You know? And the spiel with Connecticut, tell me something, because this is something I don't know. When you're looking to hold a police department liable, and I know the comment was made that it would come out of the taxpayers' dollars, but I thought police departments in general carry liability insurance where an insurance company would pay off if somebody, you know, decided to take out a lawsuit against an individual cop. And if that's the case and they switch it up to, you know, you sue or go after the individual person, I'm thinking that people possibly might not get what they're entitled to, especially during, you know, wrongful allegations, mistreatment, whatever. Did that come out right? Did I make any sense there?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, that's what I'd be curious to know. You know, do they carry, you know, insurance for them type of scenarios? And, you know, is that what they're trying to eliminate? I mean, does anybody have an answer to that?
I'm not sure.
You know,
yeah.
Because I could understand, all right, if more and more people are holding, you know, people of the police department in Connecticut liable for their actions, I would assume that every time you would put in a claim, you know, insurance premiums might go up, and they might just be to the point where, you know, they've got to do something about it. Because I don't think that if you were to sue somebody from the police department or go after them, whatever, I don't think it would come out of the taxpayers' dollars. It would come out of the police department in general, and then you're going again as an organization, whatever, you would have to have some type of liability insurance. Christ, doctors have medical malpractice insurance for just in case, whoops, there's a slip-up, you know? So that's what I'd be into. That's what I would, you know, really like to know. Does it come out of the taxpayers' money, or is it due to the high costs of insurance and people,
you know, taking a stand against being done wrong.
Yeah. Well, like France says, it always comes out of the taxes.
Well, it comes out of departmental budgets, but, you know, ultimately that comes taxpayers and revenue to the city, right?
I mean, I'm going to tell you something, Bobby. Bill and I went down. We were with the head guy from Internal Affairs and the head guy from Traffic. And basically, we arranged that if anybody wanted to come to town to get gas, food, basically, no problem. That lasted 6 months, 11 days, and 4 hours. And then all hell broke loose, and it's still going on. If you're wearing anything and you don't know how to handle yourself, they're going to do what they did to Billy. If you know how to handle yourself and ask right away when they start questioning you, I refuse to answer any questions till your supervisor gets here. And then everything stops. It's worked for the last 15 times that they've talked to me.
Yeah. So definitely, you know, it goes without saying that, you know, a good educational program as well as very quick and responsive reaction to aggressive police tactics coupled with legislation and everything else will go much further than sitting about and talking anecdotal stories about how I was fucked with. You know what I mean? Time for complaining is over. You either shit or get off the pot.
Exactly, because people have already said to him when they said that they hand him the knife and they don't let go of it, and they say, "Can I have a receipt for that?" And they say, "What, you've been talking to that fucking guy Hennigan again? You want to go that route?"
Hmm. I'll tell you what, though, if they take it out of, you know, if you can go after an individual person like you guys were just talking about, it might, you know, tone down, like, your friend that's talking with us, I can't remember his name.
Billy.
Like he was saying, Billy, okay, like he was saying that it might tone down their reaction to be stupid because it could definitely fall back on them, and being if it fell back on them, that would interrupt their own personal life, because if you can go after an individual, you know, and that would affect their families, et cetera, and maybe they'll have to stop and think before they do such stupid things.
Well, I'm here to tell you I had 7 of them taken off their motors, off their cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And they each lost $832.59 a month. So, and then 4 of them, we haven't had anybody walking a beat in Oceanside on second shift since the late 80s, early 90s. Now, and they love me.
It's because you eat pistachio ice cream, that's why.
Yeah, I can go down there and won't see a cop. First 10, 15 minutes I'm there, and then it's like I'm like a magnet. They come out of the woodwork.
Well, you better hand out some ice cream to them. Go, here you go.
Yeah. You know, and Fran, that's true. Fran wrote in, if it was a military issue knife, they'd have to give it back because by law it's not theirs, which is true. But what a lot of these guys do is they take the knives, they don't turn them in.
They take a lot of things.
Exactly. Bill had one take. Hey, they've already had guys on their department steal from their partners.
Hmm.
One guy had balls enough to wear the shirt he stole out of a guy's car.
Wow.
So there's a lot of shit going on here that can't say they can't throw stones because they live in a glass house. They're throwing stones at each other.
Hey, so Phil, I got one last thing. As we're running out of time here, I thought I'd mention really quick that I thought was very an interesting takeaway from the NCOM convention. There was a presentation by a member of the Indiana Criminal Justice Institute. He basically crunches numbers around traffic accidents and fatalities, and then makes recommendation on where federal funding gets spent and which programs. So basically, the takeaway on this is, you know, you always like the old adage, you know, follow the money trail, where even when NESTA, you know, grants money. Because they see, like in the state of California, there's X number, a large number of fatalities, so they throw it at the governor's Office of Highway Safety, or in this case, the OTS, Office of Traffic Safety, to a bunch of number crunchers and say, you know, come up with, you know, the
yeah,
the
but if you looked at
bang for the buck.
Yeah, but if you looked at the CHP reports in the last couple of years, they've actually said that everything's gone down.
Right.
So they're using this stuff from 2008 and 2009 because that's when they said it had the most highest accidents. They also proved that most of those highest accidents came because Marines, sailors, whoever was coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and were looking for that rush, and they were buying bikes that they shouldn't have been riding, no training, no nothing, and killing themselves.
Well, yeah, and to your point, I'll just stop from where I was and go back to what you just said. So, you know, the study also came back from NESTA saying that motorcyclists with 1 year, new riders basically, were, you know, provided the highest reasons for a lot of these crash fatalities. So, and even in the Indiana numbers, there was an alarming number, a portion of the percentage that had no licenses, no skills training. And so, you know, ongoing education, you know, a proper endorsement certification, and ongoing skills writing is critical to keeping these numbers down. But
yeah, because
California,
right now, if you go and you buy a bike in the military, you have to get permission first. You have to go to your platoon sergeant, who goes to the company gunny, who goes to the first sergeant, who goes to the lieutenant, to the captain, who goes to the colonel, to give you permission.
Right.
Do it that way. They punish you under NJP, non-judicial punishment. But they also make you sign up for the course, make sure your insurance and everything is up to date, make sure that you take the course, you follow all the safety rules, and if you're ever riding that bike out in town, you have to wear your vest, you have to wear everything, because I work on the base, when I go on the base, I have to pull out my vest, I have to follow all the safety stuff. When I I have to do exactly what I'm supposed to do, or they can pull my permission to ride on the base.
Right. So the reason why I even and brought this thing up and where the light bulb sort of went on for me here is because, and even in California, where I guess they can claim some level of victory because the numbers are going down, they still have fairly high numbers, and look, they're still probably receiving a lot of funding. So the thing is that unless the bureaucrats who are crunching these numbers have a very specific idea on how to approach driving the numbers down, and I know I'm oversimplifying it by saying that, they usually end up just throwing money at law enforcement to get it done. And this is where, you know, we start getting into these gray areas, because once law enforcement is funded for the sole purpose of driving down motorcycle crashes and fatalities, then it leaves it up to them, you know, basically to start going about it their own way. There's obviously no guidelines, with the exception of, you know, supposedly no motorcycle-only checkpoints, that they're able to pull over. You know, how they get it done is not really questioned, and this is where we run into the whole thing of using
safety. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're talking about now, you're talking about Escondido, California. They do that. They have driver checkpoints continuously every 1 or 2, 3 weeks, and they stop only cars. They stop only people of a certain color. They stop, and they take the car away from them. They impound. They've proven that the four tow companies in Escondido are making hand over fist, and they're splitting the money with the city.
So you're saying that these pullovers are highly successful because they are, in fact, catching a lot of folks intoxicated or driving without licenses or, you know.
Right now, the ACLU and everybody's involved in it, Bobby, to try and stop them from doing it, because all they're doing, they're not taking cars away from people of any other color or race unless they have some issue or a warrant. Other than that, these guys, if they don't have a driver's license, they don't have California identification card, California driver's license, anything, they take the car away from them.
Well, here's something to think about. Somebody, and it just came to my attention here, what happens when an illegal alien who obviously, you know, has no papers, probably has no registration, no license, is actually involved in a crash or fatality? What happens to them?
They get locked up.
I hear not very much, if anything.
They get locked up for a while, and then once they go to court and everything, they'll serve the sentence they do here, and then after they serve it, they deport them. Then
okay.
2 or 3 months after that, sneak back in anyway. They've
okay.
already proven that. They just did a big sweep over here, and they had 42 people that they've deported over the last 5 years. They've arrested them in this county, San Diego County.
Wow. Now, is that just a stamp? Is that an immigration sweep, or were they picked up as a result of some traffic infraction?
No, it's an ICE sweep. It's an ICE sweep where they do that. You know, they do that. People that have outstanding warrants and all that shit, that's when they do it.
Okay.
They do the warrant thing. They do the house check. Anything you're on the books for, and there's a discrepancy, they're coming to see you.
Mm-hmm. Invite you all to a pizza party or some free giveaways.
Hey, come on down and meet the Padres. And you walk in, you're under.
Yeah, come and meet your favorite Menudo player and an autograph, balloons for the kids.
Exactly. We're getting down to the last little bit here. I want to thank everybody for calling in and everything. And I extend it to you guys Thursday. My partner will be here on Tuesdays. He takes care of his mom. And he said to say hello to everybody. So all you returning champions, come and see us on Thursday. And I'm with a little Everlast, which is what it's like. And I thank everybody for calling in, and I hope you guys all have a good safe rest of the week. Keep the rubber side down. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a good night.
Good night. Take care, everyone. Bye.
All right, good night, everybody.